Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. This Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on a shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find some internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK Japan, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, Radio Havana, Cuba, Spanish National Radio, and Sputnik Radio. We'll begin with NHK World Radio Japan. The Trans-Pacific Partnership is welcoming Britain, which is looking for trade partners since leaving the EU. Japanese defense ministers met with the new head of the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command as more pressure is put on China and North Korea. NHK Japan.
Members of the Trans-Pacific Partnership have begun the process to welcome Britain into the trade pact. The nation has been reaching out for new economic partners since leaving the European Union. The 11-member TPP decided to open talks with Britain at a ministerial-level meeting on Wednesday. Japan was the chair. It says the TPP will play a crucial role in strengthening economies hit hard by the pandemic.
Now, the CPTPP is moving on to a new chapter with accession requests by the United Kingdom in February.
Task force groups will now conduct negotiations for Britain's entry. The British Trade Secretary took to Twitter with the news. Liz Truss called the trade deal a huge opportunity, which will bring Britain closer to some of the world's fastest-growing economies. Now, current members, including Japan, Australia, and Canada, accounted for 15% of global trade as of 2018, covering a market of 500 million people. The United States was part of early TPP talks, but pulled out soon after former President Donald Trump took office. After the virtual meeting, Nishimura said Britain's joining would help build a free and fair economic order. He added Japan is in the process of strengthening its ties with the country. The most senior officer of Japan's self-defense forces has met with the new head of the U.S. military's Indo-Pacific Command. Admiral John Aquilino assumed his post in April. His visit comes as China continues to increase its maritime presence in the region.
Japan will work closely with the United States to firmly and resolutely deal with any attempt to change the status quo in the East China Sea.
The U.S.-Japanese alliance is the cornerstone and one of the main reasons for peace and security in the region. Very important for me to come to Japan as the first stop on my first trip.
Aquilino also briefly met with Prime Minister Suga Yoshihide.
Let's work together closely to further enhance the Japan-U.S. alliance and realize a free and open Indo-Pacific.
Chinese government ships have repeatedly entered Japanese waters around the Senkaku Islands in the East China Sea. Japan controls the islands. China and Taiwan claim them. The Japanese government maintains the islands are an inherent part of Japan's territory in terms of history and international law. It says there's no issue of sovereignty to be resolved over them. Suga and Aquilino reaffirmed their countries will continue to work together to deal with North Korea. And the Japanese leader called for a further reduced burden in parts of the country that host U.S. bases, especially Okinawa Prefecture.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan. They are now heard from 9:30 to 10 p.m. at 7245 or 7355 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. Next, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. It was revealed that Denmark had helped the U.S. NSA to spy on German and other European leaders in 2013. Opposition parties in Israel agreed to form a coalition government, with Netanyahu first being replaced by right-wing leader Naftali Bennett. Then brief reports on global COVID and vaccine news. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Several European governments are demanding answers over a report that Denmark helped the US spy on Chancellor Angela Merkel and other senior European politicians. Now, initial revelations nearly a decade ago show that US intelligence tapped the phones of leaders, including Merkel. Now, a new multinational media investigation says a Danish military unit supported the US operation. Denmark's defense minister says systematic wiretapping of close allies is unacceptable.
In Israel, where opposition parties have agreed to form a new coalition government. If it's confirmed by Israel's parliament, the Knesset, it could end Benjamin Netanyahu's long-held premiership. Now, under the deal, the hardline religious nationalist Naftali Bennett would become prime minister for 2 years. He would then be replaced by centrist Yair Lapid, the man who did the groundwork to put the coalition together. The alliance includes 7 parties from across the political spectrum, including Bennett's nationalists. So, who is the man who might become Israel's new prime minister? Let's have a look.
This is the man who might lead Israel for the next 2 years. Naftali Bennett has made his political career with provocative statements that established himself to the right of outgoing PM Benjamin Netanyahu. This is him last year.
We will not allow the Israeli government to recognize a Palestinian state under any circumstances. We will not allow Israel to hand over even a centimeter of land to the Arabs. This is what we are here for, to guard the land of Israel.
But Bennett is also a generation younger than Netanyahu and has broken with allies on the religious right, on the role of religion in public life. He's also comparatively liberal on gay rights and other issues. Bennett is the son of American immigrants to Israel. He made a fortune in high tech before jumping into politics in 2013, revamping the right-wing settler party, Jewish Home. He served as Secretary of Defense and Secretary of Education under Netanyahu. Bennett would bring very little public support to the role. In 2019 elections, his Yamina party received no mandates, and in the most recent round, it won just 7 out of the 120 seats in the Knesset.
7 EU member states have launched a digital certificate system aimed at making travel within the bloc easier. It uses a QR code to prove holders are vaccinated, have a negative test result, or have recovered from COVID-19. The World Health Organization says coronavirus variants will now be named after letters of the Greek alphabet. It says it hopes that this will simplify discussion around the variants and avoid stigma. South Korea says a shipment of coronavirus vaccines to North Korea has been delayed again due to ongoing discussions. Some 2 million doses are earmarked for the country as part of the COVAX vaccine sharing program.
A Russian news agency says that COVID-19 is spreading faster than at any other time since last October. Vaccine uptake in Russia has been sluggish. Moscow's mayor says the capital has lower rates of vaccination than any major European city.
Peru has made a staggering revision of its official COVID-19 death toll. Officials are now reporting that more than twice as many people have died from the virus as previously estimated, from just under 70,000 to over 180,000. The country's health minister said a new criteria changed the count. This means Peru now has the worst death rate per capita in the world.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. On to Radio Havana, Cuba. A viewpoint on Peru, which is voting this weekend on a president between diametrically opposed candidates while facing a serious COVID crisis. In Colombia, police and military forces are brutally oppressing citizens protesting President Duque. Radio Havana, Cuba.
In the midst of a severe wave of infections due to COVID-19, nearly 25 million citizens are summoned to the polls next Sunday in Peru to define between two diametrically opposed options the future president of that nation. The health crisis, which has caused 1,890,000 cases and nearly 180,000 deaths, according to the latest figures, is not the only inconvenience faced by the organizers and participants in the electoral process. This is a country where six of its latest presidents have been accused, investigated, prosecuted, or imprisoned for corruption or serious human rights violations, which has undermined the citizens' confidence in their authorities. One of them, Alberto Fujimori, who's serving a 25-year sentence for abuses against the fundamental guarantees of Peruvians, is the father of Keiko Fujimori, who's competing in the final and second round on June 6th. She's a representative of the radical right wing, with a neoliberal agenda and desperately seeking office to avoid a money laundering case, which could send her to jail for 30 years. On the other side is Professor Pedro Castillo, proposed by Peru Libre, who's been the victim of a powerful campaign by the conservative political sector, large enterprises, and the media, who insist on portraying him as a leftist close to terrorism. Castillo's proposal is fundamentally based on making the country's national wealth benefit the most unprivileged people instead of going to the accounts of transnational corporations, also calling for a constitutional referendum and returning sovereignty and dignity to the people. He promised to universalize health and education, fight chronic malnutrition in the countryside, and favor small and medium producers to guarantee consumption. The opposing visions of Keiko Fujimori and Pedro Castillo are also a reflection of a fractured nation divided between Lima, the capital, where the commercial and financial power rest, and the Andean region, impoverished and abandoned for decades. It remains to be seen whether the vote of the poorest sectors will prevail or will be overtaken by the Fujimori-based electoral mechanism, now supported by the interests of the wealthy and traditional politicians, afraid of losing their privileges and impunity.
In Colombia, the delegate of the Front of Organizations in Struggle, and who accompanies the International Human Rights Mission, Sebastian Fernandez, denounced this Sunday that Colombian police and army forces are brutally repressing the demonstrators who have been mobilized in all regions of the country for 32 days. Marianela Navarro, a member of the International Human Rights Mission, stated that the social situation in Colombia is very delicate. Quote, videos have gone viral showing the actions of the police forces in the last 24 hours, between 8 and 10 young people have been reported killed by the Mobile Anti-Riot Squad, or the ESMAD, in Cali. Navarro added, quote, this is a tragedy, and we consider that crimes against humanity are being committed. The Colombian state has militarized the entire areas to try to break the just anger against the neoliberal policies of Iván Duque.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu. The podcasts are not being updated. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 5 p.m. to 11 at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. Next, Radio Exterior de España or Spanish National Radio. Allison Hughes reports on the Belarus action of forcing a passenger jet to land so that they could capture a dissident activist. Europe is up in arms over the event, unlike 2013 when the U.S. forced a Bolivian jet to land in Austria, thinking that Edward Snowden was on board. Amy describes the Spanish Prime Minister's support for pardoning 12 Catalan leaders for organizing a referendum in 2017. Spanish National Radio.
We turn now to news of Belarus. On Tuesday, the United Nations said it feared for the safety of Roman Protasevich, the 26-year-old reporter jailed by the Belarusian government. On Sunday, Protasevich was pulled off a flight from Greece to Lithuania and the plane forced to land in Minsk, the capital of Belarus. A dissident activist, Protasevich has lived in exile in Lithuania since 2019. He was in Athens attending a conference on economics with Belarus's primary opposition leader and was attempting to return home when his plane was diverted. The Belarusian authorities told the Ryanair jet it suspected there was a bomb on board and forced the landing in Minsk. After the plane was searched and no bomb found, it resumed its flight, but two passengers had been removed, Protasevich and his girlfriend. Roman Protasevich's appearance on Monday on state television awakened further concerns for his well-being, as wounds on his face could be seen. The UN Office for Human Rights, headed by High Commissioner Michelle Bachelet, indicated that the reporter, who supposedly confessed to crimes he'd committed, had likely been forced to make that televised appearance. Earlier, the Secretary General of NATO, Jens Stoltenberg, spoke out against the forced landing of the plane.
The forced landing of a passenger flight by Belarus was dangerous and unacceptable. This is a state hijacking and demonstrates how the regime in Minsk attacks basic democratic rights.
Belarusian state media have reported that President Alexander Lukashenko personally ordered the flight to be intercepted. Belarus says it was responding to a bomb scare that it later proved to be a false alarm. The UN agency ICAO has said that the incident may have violated the foundational treaty governing international civil aviation, the 1944 Chicago Convention. European Union leaders at a summit on Monday called for airlines based on the 27-member bloc to halt flights over Belarusian airspace, which is along a major corridor connecting Europe and Asia and earns hard currency from the overflight rights. Lufthansa, KLM, SAS, Air France and Singapore Airlines were among the carriers that announced that they would stop flying over Belarus. Spain's Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez said before the meeting on Monday of the European Council, "It is absolutely unacceptable that such events occur on intra-European flights crossing European territory. We condemn this act and demand Belarus release all its passengers, and we mean all of the passengers. Therefore, we will be debating this matter and once again the sanctions we will impose on the regime that does not follow the rules followed by all other countries." Belarus's president, Alexander Lukashenko, in office for decades, has used police and security forces to crush months of pro-democracy demonstrations after elections last year kept him in office for a sixth term. Opposition leaders said the sham elections had been rigged and criticism of the regime took to the streets. EU and US sanctions, consisting mostly of blacklisting officials from travel or business, has not much affected him. During Lukashenko's crackdown on dissent, nearly all opposition leaders have been driven into exile or have been imprisoned, many on charges of organizing demonstrations, which the government describes as terrorism. The journalist, Protasevich, has also been charged with organizing anti-government demonstrations. The only recent precedent for a government diverting a non-military jet plane in order to arrest a suspect was in 2013, when the United States forced the Bolivian presidential jet to land in Vienna, where the plane was searched on the suspicion that the NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden was on board. The rerouting of the Moscow-La Paz flight for President Evo Morales involved the closing of European airspace. The Spanish consulate in Austria searched the plane, and Spain finally apologized to Bolivia. France, too, apologized for the diplomatic crisis, with then-President François Hollande saying that Paris admitted barring the Bolivian president's plane from entering French airspace because of rumors that Edward Snowden was on board. The only reason Edward Snowden did not suffer the same fate that Protasevich suffered this week is because he happened not to be on the targeted plane that was forced to make an unscheduled landing in Vienna. Edward Snowden remains in exile in Russia.
Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sánchez has voiced his support for pardoning 12 Catalan politicians and social leaders who were convicted of sedition and misuse of public funds for organizing an illegal referendum on independence in 2017. Nine of these men have been imprisoned for over 3 years. On Tuesday, when asked about the pardons, Sánchez said the government would consider values like dialogue and understanding over revenge and vengeance. The Supreme Court fully opposes these pardons, and on Tuesday stated they would be unacceptable because the men convicted have shown no remorse for their actions. Spain's Deputy Prime Minister, Carmen Calvo, said of the pardoning, "We are the government of the whole nation. We are also the government of Catalonia. We are a government willing to sustain harmony within this country." Pere Aragonés of the pro-independence ERC party was sworn in last Friday as the new regional chief minister of Catalonia. He has said they hope the decision the government makes is a fair one and hopes it arrives as soon as possible. Spain's left-centre coalition government, headed by Pedro Sánchez, has been falling in the polls. The government depends on the support of the regional nationalist parties, as well as the ERC, Esquerra Republicana Catalana. The Popular Party and Vox, on the right, are strongly opposed to granting any pardons of the pro-independence leaders.
Those reports by Allison Hughes and Amy were from Radio Exterior de España or Spanish National Radio. Spain may be heard at their website rtve.es and by podcast as REE. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production cost of this listener-funded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California 95490. Please help support this freely distributed weekly radio show. We will conclude with Sputnik Radio. Afshin Ratansi spoke with journalist Vijay Prashad. They talk about the Wuhan lab COVID conspiracy that is being recharged by the CIA and MI6, China's changing foreign policy and defiance, and the U.S. chemical and biological weapons programs. Sputnik Radio.
Joining me now via Skype from Northampton in Massachusetts is Executive Director of the Tricontinental Institute for Social Research and author of Washington Bullets, Vijay Prashad. What do you make of these new CIA on that side of the pond and MI6 rumors that China created coronavirus in a lab?
Look, this is not a new allegation. This allegation goes right back to early 2020, when the Trump administration began to circulate a set of rumors that perhaps the Wuhan Institute of Virology or some other lab had leaked this virus, that it had nothing to do with human encroachment in nature. Now, repeatedly, this messaging has returned, despite the fact that it's been pretty well debunked by the World Health Organization, by other people who've looked at it pretty closely. It's not just the CIA. David Petraeus, former U.S. general, started talking about the need for, you know, protocols on an international scale, a kind of, just as the Chemical Weapons Treaty has a form of surveillance of places that have chemical manufacturing, there should be similar things.
Arguably, they've broken down in recent years. And David Petraeus, I'm not sure, given that he had to resign in disgrace, is the best source for any information.
He has no credibility, but what he was saying essentially was once more winking and nodding and suggesting that this has something to do with chemical weapons manufacturing, perhaps. All of this has been repeatedly debunked, but the Biden administration picking up just where the Trump administration left off.
The way the Chinese officials now respond to Antony Blinken in Anchorage and the way that now China's foreign ministry spokesperson Zhao Lijian so quick not to just quietly say, well, you know, that's an American point of view, so quick to point to Fort Detrick, just 50 miles away from Washington, D.C., and say, what on earth has been going on in your germ warfare laboratory? What did you make of this Chinese response to the Biden administration allegations?
At Anchorage, Alaska, Antony Blinken opens the meeting, the first meeting at the highest level of the Biden administration with the Chinese government by insulting the Chinese. I mean, you know, instead of saying, look, welcome to Alaska, Alaska is the gateway to Asia for the United States, instead of those pleasantries, Blinken comes there and just insults the Chinese, saying you don't understand the rules-based world order. And now, rules-based world order, we're now listening to this from the country that prosecuted the illegal war against Iraq. Councillor Wang just hit back hard at that meeting and said, what are you talking about, rules-based order? I mean, what rules have you followed?
When this rumor of the Chinese lab coronavirus came out, is it just expected from the authorities, whether it be in MI6 around the corner from here or in Langley at the CIA, that the reporters will just flip from Trump is an idiot, why is he saying it's a Wuhan laboratory, to Biden says it could be, it may well be a communist coronavirus?
We are not stenographers of the security state in the West. We would like to look at the evidence, and I'd prefer to listen to epidemiologists who look at the evidence, who've looked at the sequencing of this particular virus, and they understand that the sequencing of the virus demonstrates that it's much more likely to have developed by moving between various animals and then eventually leaping to humans than leaping out of a test tube. If only Boris Johnson listened to the science early in 2020, if only Trump listened to the science in early 2020, don't listen to the briefings from, you know, the shadows, from intelligence services, where they are disparaging the science in order to make a political point.
I mean, just give us a rundown of why the United States has 600 buildings, around 13,000 acres apparently. The WHO haven't looked into it. Do you think the USA will ever open Fort Detrick, which the CDC shut down in August 2019, just as now we discover some sightings of coronavirus around the world?
Well, I don't know if it's really shut down, because these are sites that are not inspected by independent observers. Look, there's a lot of evidence, Afshin, going back to the 19th century, of various forms of chemical and biological weaponry produced by the United States government. There's a lot of evidence. They've used it. I mean, for God's sake, we forget that in Vietnam, the United States used chemical weapons against that population, by which I mean napalm. It's the next worst thing after a nuclear bomb. David Petraeus can say whatever he wants about the need for surveillance of biological, you know, manufacturing of different kind of potential weaponry. Well, the U.S. has never allowed inspections of any of its sites. So, I mean, I'm not confident that anything is actually shut down. And I take the Chinese accusation seriously. You know, it's one thing to accept what a government says and, you know, believe that they are being completely honest and that they are being genuine about what they're saying. And it's another to allow independent inspections. Let's remember what Iraq was made to do in the 1990s, when people like Hans Blick and others went from site to site inspecting things. You remember the early part of the Trump administration, they used the mother of all bombs in Afghanistan. Journalists were not permitted to go to the site to see what had happened there. Journalists were stopped. We were given press cards by the Pentagon about how to report that story. Most of the reporting is identical.
Vijay Prashad, thank you.
That interview was by Afshin Ratansi from his program called Going Underground, heard on Sputnik Radio, the current name for the Voice of Russia, available online at rt.com. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 25th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.